we go. Oh, baby, welcome to Duck It Motherfucking Dialogue.
Oh, man, that was pretty good.
Going hard here.
This computer. Alrighty, baby. We're here with Aaron Ewer again, waiting on a few other people to come in. But he was just telling me a funny story. I know where he's going with this. But our kids are about the same age, and they love going to the movies. That's their thing right now. That's the jam. And tell us your movie story here.
So we go to these matinees, you know, middle of the day, Sunday matinees. You get like four tickets for like $25.
Mm-hmm.
You go to buy concessions, $85. Yeah. Like, you got to take a mortgage out on your house to buy concessions these days. So this morning, I was going through my kid's drawers. I'm like, hey, kid, man, you don't have any cargo shorts. He's like, what's a cargo short, Dad? Like, I said, you see these pockets on my shorts? We got to get you shorts with these pockets. So I went to like four stores, and I wound up finding some at Old Navy. He's like, Dad, what are the pockets for? I'm like, I'm going to teach you how to smuggle appropriately into the movie.
You're like movie theater 101, bro. Yeah. They're not going to check you.
So before we go and we go into the dollar store, we get to like two for a dollar candies, whatever. We're starting to stick them in his pockets.
Yep.
And we're like, don't say anything about the candy. Don't draw any attention.
Shut
to
your fucking
it.
Mouth. You shut your
mouth. Yeah. Shut the fuck up. Shut up. You're my mule. Shut up. So we go and we get in line, and at our theater, you get your ticket and your concessions at the same place. So I'm like, all right, go up there with my wife and my son. And I'm like, I just need three tickets for the, you know, pet movie or whatever, the League of Extreme Pets or whatever it was. So we get these, and my kid's standing back there smacking his cargo pockets, just fucking crunching these bags. Yeah, he's like, Dad. Dad, I'm like, not now, Wyatt, not now. He's like, no, Dad, look. And, yeah.
You're like, look at the Sour Patch Kids I have.
Uh-huh. And like, these were just a bunch of kids working the concession stand, man. They didn't care.
I know. We're trying to be all sneaky about it. And it's like teenagers working there that are just know what's going on, and they're just shaking their head.
Yeah. No, they're like, do you want like a to-go bag so you can put all your candy in the bag instead of leaving it in your kid's pocket?
You're just like, pulling out candy from everywhere, yeah. Like his pockets, his inside his pants, freaking his shoes.
We're like, there's like us and another family in the movie. And in the middle of the movie, my kid goes, hey, Dad, can we have them fish now? And I'm like, yeah, man. And then he, dude, you don't know, like, the movie's playing and you think he's being quiet. He's like,
oh, it's so loud, bro.
It's so loud. I'm like, what? Shh, man, you're interrupting the movie for somebody else. And then dude's like, don't worry about it, man. My kids are doing the same shit.
I'm like, all right. You're like, cool. He's like, I don't want to be here either, bro.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know what it is, but it is what it is. But yeah, man.
You think that they would make candy that opens quietly for the movies?
There you go, man. There's your $1 billion idea.
Yeah,
but no silencers just, on Skittles, dude.
It doesn't matter. Whatever candy you get, it's gonna. You try to open it. You try to time it for when the movie's loud, and you know you're like, okay, I'll be courteous, and then go silent, like the most suspenseful part, and done, son.
They're about to reveal the killer, and you're like.
And then sorry, motherfucker.
You pull it too hard, and all the Skittles pop off, and they start hitting the floor and bouncing down the aisleways. Yeah, it's my life, dude.
We were shit kids as going to the movie. We go to the movies a lot in Watertown because there's nothing to do.
Yeah,
just sit in the snow and go to the movie.
Salmon Run Mall.
Yeah, and we would just cause a ruckus in that movie theater.
Yeah, I remember going when I was like in high school and stuff, trying to take girls there. And in my mind, like, that was the perfect place to try and get a hand jibber. Like,
it really was.
Yeah, like, in my, like, high school adolescent brain, taking a girl to a movie theater, which back then they were always packed, and trying to get her to play with my dick for, like, 2 hours. And then it never failed. Last 5 minutes of the movie, she'd be like, okay, I'll play with your dick. And I'm like, we don't have time for this now.
I know. I always wait it out.
Yeah, they timed it. They're like, this movie is 87 minutes long at the 85-20 mark, I'm going to start playing with your penis. Joke's on her.
There's not a lot of people at the movie theater anymore, so I feel like I can get away with it better.
Yeah, you want to go and get a hand job now, go to the movie theater.
Well, well, probably because we're going at the matinees now. That's where we were wrong, dude.
The Sunday afternoon matinees. <Yeah.
laughs> We should have been going there.
Yep. Good old, yep. Good old hand job.
Good old HJ. Little hand jibber.
Little hand jibbers, man. Yeah. Or if you tried and you were slick, you can try and get a little mouth jibber going. But the one chick I took straight up looked me in the eyes and goes, then how am I going to watch the movie? And I'm like,
you're like, we're not here to watch the movie. Like,
I'll give you a recap.
You use your ears, use your other senses.
Yeah. Pretend you're blind.
What was that? There was a movie or a stand up or something. I think it was a comedian that talked about cutting the hole in the bottom of the popcorn.
Yeah.
Putting your wiener in there.
And then you get a grease dick because there's so much butter.
Yeah, but then it's good. That's what you want.
It's built-in lubricant at that point.
Yeah, and it tastes better.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you put butter on corn, you put butter on chicken, you put butter on bread, put butter on wiener.
Butter on cock. TM.
TM. Oh, my golly.
So, you got Dave coming back in tonight.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Who's there's Cody Marshall, right? The other gentleman of the
evening? So he was in the military as well. He was an infantry guy though. He was in Bravo Company, 3rd Platoon, my platoon, for the 09 deployment to Afghanistan.
All right.
He was day drinking today, so we'll see. He's like, dude, I just want to make sure I got the time
out
right.
Of the movie theater.
He's
right,
like, I'm day drinking though. I'm like, all right, we will not see you later, sir. We will not see you.
It's 9 a.m. I'm day drinking right now, buddy.
I don't know. He's in the infantry. He'll probably wake up. And
he'd probably be. Yeah, he'll come back from a run. Like, yeah, man, I was good. I'm good. Sobriety runs. Yeah, I don't. I'm getting old, man. Day drinking, I don't jive with me anymore.
I had a margarita earlier for lunch. We went out Torchy's Tacos, I think it was called. Yeah, Torchy's Tacos.
Nice.
And came home and took a sweet little nap.
Oh, one margarita and you're passed out, bro.
Done, dude. I can't drink like I used to. I've been getting really bloated.
Yeah, you look a little bloated.
Dude, I weigh 200 pounds now.
Oh, that's nothing. I'm at 215, bro.
Really?
Yeah, no joke.
200 is a lot for me. The other day, I weighed 194. I'm like, all right.
Then you went to lunch and had tacos and margaritas.
Yeah, now I didn't shit for a couple of days, and now I'm 200-something.
Nice. Yeah, 215 is the most I've ever weighed. That's what I'm sitting at now. But my wife's like, you look good.
Oh, we got Kentucky. We got Cody calling in.
Cody?
Yo. What up, bro? Oh, what'd you say? Let me see. Sorry, I got
asking about the podcast tonight. I don't know if my phone's data will be strong enough for like a video.
Dude, it doesn't matter. You don't need video. We just record the audio, really.
Okay. All right, cool.
But I just started it. Me and you are talking. If you want to join us, bro, we're here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I answered you on Facebook. Sorry, I thought I called the right number. Did I call you?
Yeah, my shit was on silent.
Oh, okay. I love you, baby. We're going to talk about ECP. Gump, get on here and we'll chitty chat, bro. All
right, give me like a few minutes.
All right, you're good. Do you have the right link? It should be the link in your Facebook.
Yeah.
I love you, baby.
Bye.
Noise.
Nice.
Noise.
Got one. Come on, Dave. Need that fucking snipped ball sack of yours to
be
front and center.
See, we were thinking about getting me snipped. It's flip flopping every day. My wife's like, all right, we got to get you snipped. We think we're good on kids, right? Two's enough.
That's where I'm at.
She's like, you know, today she's all, I think we need another one. Do you think we should have another one?
Maybe we should have another one. Honeymoon stage.
With yeah. The baby and she's like,
the smells and the.
Fucking, yeah, the smells. Yeah. The baby smell. Uh-huh. Like, all right, maybe let's just hold off and maybe have another one. Like, not right away, but let's have another one. And then, you know, this afternoon comes around. This was this morning when she said that. Eli, our 4-year-old, is going nuts. She's like, all right, maybe let's just stick to one. let's go back to one. All right.
Yeah, that's my plan too. Is, excuse me, my wife's pregnant right now, and she wants one child of each gender. Right. I know that's taboo to say, but she wants a boy and a girl. Yeah. She wants one.
You gotta let them choose.
Right. So I tell her that I only shoot boys, and she gets real mad.
Keep shooting.
I've got her on the fence right now because I also would do with the whole snipping.
Yeah.
Like two kids, I feel like, you know, when Wyatt was born, I redid that room. And now that we're having another baby, I got to move Wyatt into our spare room. I got to redo it because, like, I guess that's what I do when I'm expecting a child is I redo a room. You got
to fucking redo a room. You can't just put it in a corner.
Right. Right.
You can't put baby in a corner because of that fucking movie. That fucking movie. Yeah.
So I'm a fucking went to dude. The cost of shit right now is ridiculous. It costs $55 for a gallon of fucking paint.
It costs $1,000 for me to look at my truck.
For you to run your own diagnostic, it's $1,000.
I think about driving that fucker 5 feet and it's like, you lose $1,000. Do not pass.
You get that insufficient fund alert on your cell phone goes off. You're like, oh shit.
About driving today and my bank alerted me? Fuck no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm too
man.
Poor to even think about that shit.
Oh, dude. Yeah. You're not kidding. Everything's expensive.
Especially diesel, dude. But it's not even regular gas is fucking, it's outrageous, bro. $4 or $5 a gallon.
Yeah, my truck's a little older. It's 2013 Ram. So I just run the unleaded 87.
I'm like about to make my truck run on milk, motherfucker.
Fucking extract it yourself. You be out there fucking milking udders. but everything's crazy. But I spent fucking 3 gallons of paint, it's like a step stool, but it's elongated, so you have a platform so I can paint the ceiling. And like a tool. And I walked out of there like $250.
Yeah, dude.
I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then my buddy chimed in. He's like, oh, man, that's why you just pay somebody to do it. I'm like, have you got a quote on anything lately? He's like, yeah, man. He's like, I got a quote on 2 doors and they want to charge me $6,000. I'm like, to put 2 fucking doors in, they want to charge you $6,000.
You know what the fucking worst is? Plumbing. If you have PEX piping and you need that stupid crimping tool thing that costs $1 million and you're like, oh, I could do this easy. I could fix this no problem. It's just one crimp, one little fucking thing that's not set.
Yep.
And then you got to go buy the whole fucking tool, dude.
Yep. Yeah. And they know. You walk into Lowe's and you're like, I need the crimp. And the dude looks at his buddy and he looks back and they give each other the grin.
Like, yeah. Like, this motherfucker's about to drop $200.
Like, yeah, we got the crimp, buddy. It's on sale. And you're like, sweet. You go back there. It's on sale from $267 to $257. Yeah. You're like, hey, thanks, guys. Assholes, yeah, I'll give you the $10 to leave me alone right now. But I went through a stint of like not being allowed to go to the hardware store by myself.
Yeah. Well, the same way your wife can't go to Target by herself. It's the same reason you can't go to hardware store by yourself.
The one day I go.
Have you ever gone? Go ahead. And I
went to Lowe's. It's specific to Lowe's that I have these terrible incidences. I went to the paint department. This was about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And I'm standing over there. There's no one in the paint department. Like, okay.
Of course.
So then this old dude walks up and he's
doesn't
like,
doesn't even work there. He used to work there.
He's like, is no one working the paint desk today? I'm like, no, man. I'm like, give me a second. I'm going to go to customer service. So I go over to customer service and they're like, you know, LaDasha, report to paint. So then by the time I get back over there, LaDasha's there. And like, she walks over to the old man and he goes, he looks at her and goes, this gentleman was here first, points at me. And he's the one that like had you paged over here. And she goes, well, he can wait.
Dang, you interrupted her day, baby.
So I was like, okay. So, you know, I just putz around the paint department for like 20 minutes and the old dude didn't buy anything. And on the way out, he's like, good luck. And I'm like, I got this. So she comes over. She's like, what do you need? I'm like, I need, you know, 3 gallons of this paint right here. She's like, okay. She's like, it'll be, you know, about 5 minutes. Let me mix it. I'm like, cool. So she gets all 3 kinked there. And she's like, you need anything else? I'm like, nope. And I start walking toward the exit. She's like, don't you want your paint? I'm like, no. She's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm leaving. I said, good luck with the paint. I fucking walked right out the door. Bitch. I'm not fucking like.
She made these... you a Karen. She said you're a Karen now.
No, I ruined her day, man.
Dude, it's crazy. Well, people, I don't know if it's people don't want to work or if they're just fed up with this.
Consumerism. I don't know what it is, man. I think it's a culmination of all of the above, right?
A lot of it starts with our education system and not teaching people how to think critically, but how to regurgitate nonsense. Yeah. You're being taught how to sit in one place for an extended period of time and take orders.
I had that.
That's all school is.
With one of the dudes I work with, and he's got a master's degree in like
puppetry,
circle jerking dinosaurs. And we're sitting there.
Hold on, I know a few places that are hiring for dinosaur circle jerks, dude.
Yeah, right. They're just all doing a boners out group hub right now. a prehistoric boners out group hub. That's what's happening. So I'm talking to him and he started getting kind of poopy because I was talking about like structured higher education college and stuff. Mm. And he's like, well, I have a master's degree. I'm like, anybody can who has the time to sit in one spot long enough and look at one screen and type it onto another screen can have a master's degree in our society. He's like, well, I have $60,000 in college debt. And I'm like, and you have the same job I do.
You should have said, you got $60 million gajillion in college debt when you could have just got that same education for $1.60 in late fees at the local library.
Exactly.
Say, you like apples? How do you like them apples?
Right.
So what movie was that? Beautiful Mind? No, not Beautiful Mind.
Goodwill Hunting.
Goodwill Hunting.
You like apples? How you like them apples, bitch?
Yeah. Next semester, you're going to quote Hootie Hoot, blah, 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 blah.
Ooh, prehistoric circle jerk. So that's what I told him. I said, next time I find a dinosaur bone in my backyard, I'll be sure to give you a call, buddy.
Yo, and, you almost made me spit that out.
Until then, like, you're pretty much the dinosaur bone. So you're pretty much, you're not doing very hot in life.
Is that like a Harvard program? Circle-jerking dinosaurs?
Yeah, like that, like whole culture around like that, like Dutch ruddering each other in big circles, lots of dicks. Yeah, it's definitely that. But I honestly, like, I feel bad. Like, my wife's stepbrother, for example, he has a certificate in precision machining. He runs like CNC saws and stuff.
Yeah,
and like, he makes good money doing that, but none of his skills transfer, even though he has all these skills he's amounted, right? He's been a crew lead and he's done all this other shit. But because he doesn't have a bachelor's degree in anything, because that's what they want to see, a piece of paper, he can't get a job outside of these factories. And I'm like, yeah, man, I don't know. Society's weird. It's just weird.
Yeah, and I don't know, a lot of things can just be learned on the job, but it's not about that. It's about money. It's about money.
It's the money grab,
dude. A way to get our money and fucking poop on our souls.
Oh yeah, dude. There's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of spiritual defecation in our society. Soul diarrhea.
It's soul diarrhea. He's coming in. He's downloading Zoom. He's trying to get in through Duo.
He's got it.
Through Duo. Well, I think that's the problem. Is a lot of people. There's people don't. It used to be where people would work. You know, you work a 9-to-5 job. You're going to get a retirement. And everything's going to be taken care of, and you can live the rest. You work 30 years or so and live the rest of your life chilling. Well, that wasn't the case. People were retiring and not being able to make ends meet, living in fucking shitty conditions because the retirement is trash.
That is.
And or they would work for a company for, you know, 20 years and then the company would go under and then they'd just be fucked. And, you know, it's so you have this whole generation of people who see what a scam it is to work for a company for their entire life, not knowing when they could die, you know, like, oh, okay, I'm gonna retire knowing after 30 years, and then what if I fucking die the next day and right. I just wasted my entire fucking life.
I had that
for another company
with my father-in-law. Good dude, he's been a cop for I want to say like 22 years and he retired, and now he took a job in the state of Ohio being the union rep for the police officer.
Okay.
He hates his life and he's collecting retirement and he's working. He was talking to me and he's like, dude, you work like a strong 40 hours. Like you won't work 41. I said, no, the only time I have to take over my 40 hours is if I'm on call. I said, I'm very stern on that because it's like my kids are growing. My kids growing up, my wife's pregnant with another kid. I want to spend time when I'm young with them doing stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to blink my eyes. I'm going to be 55. I'm going to be in a fucking wheelchair, you know, fucking old. And what do I have? Right. I either spent time with my family outside of work.
Or you made money.
Or I made money. And at the end of the day, I'd rather have memories yeah. with my wife and kids versus.
Buy more time, dude. You can't buy more time.
You get old, you know.
And you don't know nice when. Like, you can put you know, your penis wristwatch on and try to tell the time, but
well, that's geosynchronous is when you have your penis on your wrist. It's geosynchronous timing, right? It's like you ever watch those movies and in the White House they got like the time in, you know, China and the time in Manhattan or whatever. If you put your penis over your wrist, you get global time around the earth.
Nice, I took a picture. it hit me after because I was trying to text him telling him how to get in here. So if it completes the circle, if yes. you can, does it? Okay, you got to stretch it around and touch what the base of your like. Can you stretch the nuts, or does it have to touch? Is nuts not involved?
Well, in my case, like I could just set my ball sack down, and it's like silly putty; it'll just eat my whole hand. So then I got a time gauntlet that I can do whatever I want. I could freeze time and just go about life, man.
So, all right. Speaking of this, so my fucking kid, dude, he kills me. I made the mistake of he was like running around naked one day, and I was like, Eli, you sat in gum, and he was like, what? He was like, where? He's like, I sat in gum. I was like, right there. It's right there, dude. And I pointed and he's like, that's not gum, that's my balls. And I was like, yeah, that's gum, dude. He sat in gum. And then now he comes up to me and he'll just like pull his nutsack out. I'm like, daddy, I sat in gum. I'm like, oh shit, what did I do, dude?
And you said it once and only once to the kid, and that's stuck.
Daddy, I sat in bubblegum.
Oh yep. Yeah. Kids do that, man. They pick up on like the worst things. And like
he says, yeah, baby, all the time, which is good. Yeah, he's baby. Like, yeah, baby. Mm-hmm. He'll do something on his tablet. He get like doing playing a game. Yeah, baby. Then he'll be like, shit.
Yeah. We were in the pool with my in-laws, and I don't know what I was doing. I was dicking with my wife. I was doing something.
You were dicking her?
Yeah, right there in front of everybody. I was dicking her down. So I was pissing with her or whatever I was doing. My kid looks at me and goes, don't be a dick. And I was like, oh, man, you know, I got a parent right now. So yeah. I'm like, hey, buddy, like.
You're like, fuck, in your head, you're switching from, like, chilling to parent mode real quick. You're like,
right. And I
was act like I know what I'm doing here.
I was stern on, like, that's not one of my choice words. I don't use the word dick a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to explain this to him and get out, like, where he heard it from, and he's going this roundabout story with a make-believe friend he has. And my wife's like, you won't get in trouble. He goes, dad says it all the time. I'm like, what?
Throw me under the bus quick.
Quick. I'm like the family scapegoat, brother. Like it just is, man. Oh, like my in-laws do it too. Like something bad will be happening, and like just because I was present, they'll be like, "It was you."
Yep. You're like, "What the fuck?
What the fuck did I do? I have a burrito and a Bud Light, and how is this my fault?"
How far along is your wife? How do you know the sex yet?
My wife is, I'm almost 2 months along, so like we're in the stage where we haven't even told anybody. But
I was about to say, dude, he did not tell me that. Is this you're releasing this now?
We talked about it a little bit on the last podcast, but
the end of the last one is a little fuzzy.
There's a lot of ball sacks. All I remember is just, you know, my dick, your dick, his balls, like whatever.
I know, it's really the only video I think I got to edit before I put out there.
Oh, yeah. That one was just put a content warning on there.
Yeah. Right.
No, male nudity, but
nut sacks. No nut sacks.
We're excited. She just went for an ultrasound. No one was killed in the heart making of this movie.
You got an ultrasound. It's there. It's forming.
Yeah. So we went into the ultrasound, and I work in radiology. I don't tell them this because, like, they don't care. I don't care. But I'm sitting there watching the screen, and you can see the little flickers of the heartbeat and stuff. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, baby's alive. So then, like, she goes, oh, I can't tell you anything, you know, blah, blah, blah. So me and my wife are walking out. She goes, it always makes me so nervous. I'm like, baby's fine. I saw its heartbeat. She's like, how do you know? I'm like, working radiology.
Yeah, I can see it every day. Yeah. Dude.
She's like, well, how do you know it was the heart? I'm like, what else goes?
It's like, I don't know, the Baja Man.
Yeah. So we have a running joke in our family, who gets naming rights to our children. Mm. And
the mailman.
Right. The father of the baby. Yeah. So I won naming rights to my son in a putt-putt match against my wife.
Nice.
So
the first one?
Yeah. I named him myself, Wyatt, whatever. She had to agree. I couldn't come up with a retarded name. And like, expected to be cool with it. So then we're drinking in Canada one day. My wife's stepmom owns a cabin in Canada on a lake, and we're drinking, and my wife made the stupid bet with me, which I already knew the answer to. I don't even remember the confident bet, but I was like, Alex, don't bet on this. She's like, you're fucking wrong. And I'm like, you've had half a martini. Like, I'm not wrong. Like, like, you got beer muscles on because you never drink. You had half a fucking martini. Like, do not bet me on this. Her dad's like, don't do it, Alex. So whatever the bet was, we had to call her mom. Her mom's like, Aaron's right. She's like, fuck no. So now I have naming rights to the next child.
Nice, dude. Name him Wyatt again.
I should. Well, what name did I come up with ridiculous names. I keep telling my wife, if it's a girl, if we're having a daughter, my daughter has to have an ugly fucking name.
Mm.
She's like, why? I'm like, because, like, when you're a dad to a son, you only got to worry about one dick. You know,
when you're a dad to a daughter,
you gotta worry about all the dicks,
all of them, every single one in the world,
right? So in order to get her out of high school without being pregnant, I find that, like, kids are usually pretty mean, and they'll latch on to whatever they can make fun of you for. So if you have a absolutely retarded name, they're gonna make fun of you more than they're gonna try to fuck you. So
I don't know. I don't think the name matters at that point. Have you ever met a girl and been like, oh, your name is weird, I'm not going to have sex with you now?
Or no, because there's half the time.
A lot of times you're like, oh, name. What's your name afterwards? You know what I mean? Yeah, you ask for it later.
That's true. You're like, yeah, I was sleeping with what's her face.
Because when the first time you ask, you're not really listening. You're just like, all right, what's my next move?
Yeah, you're sniffing around or crouching. You can't really. You're not really. You're trying to get a sense of the situation. There, like, okay, all right.
Let me get that snatchy snatch.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me pause the recording here. I'm gonna get a drink. We're gonna get. All right. We're back. We're just talking about some disorders that we've come across in our day. Like, I mean, I think what percentage of men do you think suffer from itchy seam?
Itchy seam. I would say. 98.6% of all biological males suffer from itchy seams.
No, I swear. I was just telling you. So, catch everybody up. Your seam, all right, is your taint, your gooch, the space between your ball, your grundle. The space between your balls and your butthole.
Yeah.
And that's where God sewed you up. That's where you're sewed up. And some men suffer from chronic itchy seam, and I swear my brother, I think he went to the doctor and tried to get this figured out, because he suffers from legit itchy seam disorder. That's the technical term for
it. It's 100% the most accurate description. And
it's Smith. Yo, you better get on this podcast right now, because I'm on here with Ewer and you need to be here.
Show me your seam.
You're on a podcast right now?
Yeah, you want to get on it and show me your seam? All right, I'm sending you the link.
Does your seam ever itch, buddy?
It's itchy seam, dude. All right, we're getting some people in here, dude.
Nice. Let's do it. Let's have a conversation.
I feel like that seam conversation, we were on to something there.
We are, yeah. We're bringing medical awareness to a chronic problem that males suffer from.
Mm-hmm. Itchy seam.
And it never fails. When your seam starts itching and you have a itchy seam flare up, you're in the worst possible spot to itch it.
Yeah, it's really, you can't incognito itch your seam, because it's like
you gotta roll the seam flesh.
Like you're rolling a booger, like Matthew McConaughey in that car commercial.
Yeah. Like, and then you got to smell your fingers afterwards.
Yeah.
Every time.
Not smell your fingers.
You got to get the sniff. Like, how's my seam doing? Is it cleaned up?
It's wicked.
And there's no way to get at it, man. There's no good way to get in there, especially if you're wearing jeans.
No, you need like some sort of sweat pant or some sort of loose fabric material. Mm-hmm. Because with that seam issue, you try to scratch your leg through fucking denim. You can't scratch your leg through denim.
Well, you can't even get to the, because when you're wearing the jeans, there's like a pocket of space where the crotch of the jean is, and then where your actual anatomy is.
Yeah.
And you can't get to it.
Yeah. There's like a void.
Yeah. And then you either have one or two options. You can either try to go from the back to get to your seam, which looks like you're digging into your nut, your asshole.
Yeah, you don't want that.
You go from front and you have to like part the nutsack to one side to get in there, and then do the pinch and roll.
Many relationships have been lost over the miscommunication of, is he itching his seam or his butthole? Because some, you know, they're like, oh, he's really getting in that butthole, he might like that kind of thing. And that turns people off, and it could have just been an innocent seam scratch.
Right.
Mistaken for a butthole plug.
How do you recover from this? Say you're in a high school football team.
Yeah.
And you're walking in and all
you got a wicked seam itch.
And you got a wicked seam itch, and you're in the locker room and you go for the scratch. And then
but you go from the back like an amateur, and then people think you're just a straight up butthole fingerer.
They think you're going really in.
You're just
they think like, and then you come out to smell the fingers and you can never make it discreet. You're like,
Yeah.
And everybody's like, this faggot just scratched his asshole.
Yep. And he sniffed his fingers. And if it was a sea mitch and sniff, it would have been fine. It
could have been something as innocent as a snee mitch and sniff. Yeah. That's it.
Yep.
We definitely we need a billboard, man.
We need to make something for that awareness. Seam itch awareness.
We do. We need our own little ribbon.
Smith is here.
Oh,
well, hello there.
What up, Michael Smith Mittens?
What's going on? What's happening?
Hi, buddy.
Turn your video on, baby.
This video right here.
that's the exact video we wanted. Leave it to Smith to show us.
Oh my God.
5 seconds into the podcast.
So, all right. For everybody who's listening, every single one person, only one listens. We got Michael and Smith entering the conversation. Michael and Smith he's Anthony Smith, but I like to call him Ann for short because, like, you know, it sounds better. He hasn't really figured out where he's at yet. So Michael Ann Smith was a medic with us in 132 Infantry. He was with Dog Company. Charlie Dog Company. Say something here, brother.
Yeah, man.
He's pounding. There's no lifeline.
Yeah, I was with the Dog Company. I was the senior line medic once we got back. Remember that? All right.
Yeah, okay,
but I was a line medic during 2009 in our deployment.
Well, before we get into it, oh, he's shotgunning a beer. Do it.
No, it's a 7-Up.
Oh.
You did it. Like, didn't it look like he was about to he strategically like popped the top right off cam. He's like,
yep.
Well, then he opened.
I expected you guys to think it was beer.
So before we get into it and talk a little bit about your military background, we were just having a conversation about something that is plaguing men everywhere, and it's chronic seam itch. Do you
chronic
suffer
what
from that?
Itch?
Seam. S-E-A-M.
Depends on which seam you're talking about. If you're talking about my ass. Oh, yeah, my gooch, my ass crack. Yeah. I itch my face itches too now that you said it.
Because you didn't wash your hands after itching the seam. Yeah.
See, he smelled his fingers. He went right for the smell every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't itch your ass and not smell it.
It's part of the disorder. You have to smell your fingers.
Yeah. What is that? Have you ever done anything gross with your fingers and not smelled it?
No,
I always smell my fingers. What? Why would I do something gross with my fingers and then not just double check?
But why?
You have to.
Yeah,
it's like
touch your, the you're collecting your nose so you can save it for later.
It's the Italian part of me.
Baba Booey.
You know what Duff used to do? He used to fart in his hand and then throw it at you.
Yeah,
used cup to. Of soup. My kid does that now. That's your neck. I didn't even teach him.
that's part of the, like, one of the, what do they call them thing? The milestones as you're developing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The cup of soup, it's on the chart, you know, when you're in the percentiles, you're like, oh, they're at the 56th percentile. Have they thrown a fart in your face yet? Yep. Like, as a matter of fact, they have.
Yeah.
So he's way ahead of his class.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's advanced in throwing farts.
Yeah. So Michael Anthony Smith, medic of the year. You were the top medic of something. What'd you win? What'd you get?
Oh, I get the top. It was a top Army medic competition, EFMB, CMB, all that stuff.
Was it weird that you were the only one doing the competition?
He competed against himself.
Here's the thing. If you
want
to win,
yeah, dude, I just went to these stores and bought these badges.
They don't even ask. They don't even ask if you have it. They just let you buy it. So
Bradley's at Drum, bro. Just went in there and bought it.
There it is.
Yeah.
All right. So hold on. I got a wicked booger. Hold on. I got to get this thing out real quick.
Just
hold
get
on.
In there.
We're recording it. All right. So Michael Anthony Smith, tell us what. What got you into the military initially? Why did you join the military? And how old were you?
Okay, so I was 20. I think I was like 21 or 22. And I was working for Best Buy. And, you know, I was winning competitions there too. I was the top salesman in the lower United States once there. And I don't know, I was getting bored with it. I felt like I wasn't doing anything with my life that was meaningful.
Hold on, hold on, hold on. You were top salesman in the southern region of Best Buy.
Let me explain something to
you. And you didn't feel like you were doing something with your life?
Yeah, what am I going to tell my grandkids?
So you went from top salesman at Best Buy to some piece of fucking shit in the army?
Yeah. Yeah, you got to
start
somewhere, right?
You gave up that fucking life, dude?
No.
The sacrifice. Hold on.
Yeah.
I salute you, sir.
All right. Oh.
The sacrifices that we make for this country, dude. Okay, yeah. So
I just
identify as that, right? Top salesman for Best Buy.
Yeah, that's the only thing I identify when I walk in and I meet someone. Resume,
right?
Yeah, I go to shake their hand and I go, you know, I used to be top salesman, lower United States, Best Buy, store 357.
So, okay, 357. Yeah. Shout out.
Yeah,
it's a meth lab now. He's gone.
Well, now that I'm gone. Yeah.
All right. So what made you were in Best Buy. You hated that your seam was super itchy.
Yeah. I just kept smelling it and it was bad. But yeah, like, I don't know. I just wanted to do something impactful, something that meant something in the world. Mm-hmm. And the choices are, they're always, you know, firefighter, police officer, you know, teacher, military, something like that. And I thought, you know, it'd be badass if I kicked down doors and shot terrorists in the face. But then I got convinced not to be an 11 Bravo by
who
my
convinced
ex.
You that? Okay.
She'd say things like, well, you're not going to be able to get a job after the military if you're an infantryman, which, by the way, is completely wrong.
Yeah, right.
Because you're also not going to be able to get a job after the military as a medic.
Yeah.
So anyway, I became a medic, and that's how I got to drum, and I met your dumbass.
Yeah. Then, all right, so course. Hold on. How did that whole, so you were the girl then, and she said you were going to join the army, and she said, don't be 11 Bravo, be something else?
Yeah.
And you were like medic?
Yeah.
Okay, so you became a medic.
I'm just going to turn my video off for 1 second.
Oh my God.
He's got to scratch his seam.
Yeah.
He didn't want to show
you in front of us, dude. Just front side only.
He comes in with the fingers of the nose. Gotta get at it, man. Oh,
okay. So join the army.
Yep. Decided to go. And then when I was in basic, I was like, anywhere but drum, right? Because I'm from Houston, right? So I wasn't used to the cold.
But you knew you didn't want to go to Fort Drum.
Oh, yeah. I heard bad stories. I was like, anywhere but drum, just because it's so cold.
Yeah,
I don't want to deal with it. So anyway, I immediately got drum.
You gained, like, you get the orders. So
yeah,
here's a timeline. Here's a timeline. If it say, you know, you get the orders at 10 o'clock a.m. to go to Fort Drum. At 10:01 a.m. you gain 25 pounds. From getting the orders.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You gotta put the blubber on, man.
Get your little heat insulation
you,
there.
You pack the weight on, you identify as an Eskimo, and you go right to drum. That's what happens.
Okay, so you got to drum, but you got there late, right? Were you there when we were deployed when you got there?
I got there like 2 months before we were deploying I remember being told, don't worry, your unit will train you up before you deploy or anything like that. And I get there and they go, oh, hey, don't unpack because, like, we're going to Afghanistan. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to unpack then.
Right. I'm just going to take my bags with me, right?
Yeah. So basically, I mean, I wasn't there, but, you know, 2 months, 3 months before we left.
Okay. I think me and Duff got to the unit about the same time.
Yeah, I think so.
Then Smith came. Right, like you said, right about the time we were gearing up for deployment. And I think he got there and it was winter time because we deployed in like January and we were trying to paint tricons and it was like negative 20 degrees outside. You can't paint metal with spray paint when it's like negative 20 outside.
And wet and
comes out fucking snow.
And they're yelling at you because like your platoon sergeant would go check the tricons that you were supposed to have painted it. Down there, like, how fucking stupid are you? Can't even paint in the fucking snow. You're right. I can't. But I can scratch my seam.
Yeah, baby. Seam scratching. All right. So then we deployed. And what? So you were 22, 21?
Yeah, like 21, 22, something like that.
Because I turned 21 in Afghanistan. Are you the same? Are you older than me?
I think I'm older than you.
Okay.
July of 85.
You're fucking old.
You're old. I'm talking about I'm old. You're old.
All right. I was 88.
I feel old.
Oh, I must have been 23 then.
So do you feel like when you deployed, like you were saying that you, they told you that you were going to get trained at your unit, and by that time we were already gearing up to go. So yeah. Do you feel like you were properly trained or ready for what you were about to go into, or how did you feel about it? How much of a bond did you have with your platoon at that time?
Oh, it's interesting that you'd say that, because when I first got to the unit and I got assigned to, you know, Delta Company, they were giving out nicknames and they didn't know me very well. So they nicknamed me Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman. So that was my first nickname.
It's very accurate. Very accurate.
That was after I got nicknamed Mittens from you.
Yep.
And then once we were there, I was not ready for what I, like the very first time I saw like the first dead body or the first contact I got into, basically the first time anything that I wasn't used to happen, I wasn't properly ready for it. But how could you be, you know? How can,
what was your I mean, and if it's too much to talk about, or what was your first experience with casualties or
well, I think the first one, the first time I had seen just a dead body in general was, we were going to check out this jingle truck that had gotten RPG'd. And, you know, I was walking in the back with the platoon sergeant, Sergeant Jeffers, and Lieutenant Poe called me up there and he, Doc, get up here. See if this guy's dead. Now he's, you could tell from pretty far away, that guy's not.
He didn't even have half a head anymore.
you could tell. And so he,
like, there's he has a piece of paper with a stick figure head drawn on.
He's like, you know, check the, he does the, check the neck, do the medic stuff you do. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure he's dead. He's like, you have to check to be sure. So of course I, you know, I put my glove on because I'm not touching that.
Yeah.
And I checked the neck and he was super cold. Goes, super dead. And then that whole night, all I could think about was like, ah, damn, man. You know, that's the first time I've ever seen anything like that. You can't prepare yourself for it. Well, you just see it.
Yeah. That and like, and I think I recall this correctly. When you got there, like me and Duff and a lot of the guys that had been there for a while had done all the training and done everything else. The last thing we actually wanted to think about was like army stuff, medic stuff.
So we were saying goodbye to our family at that point.
Yeah. Like we were mentally lapsed out. So like, not only did you have very limited resources, what resources you did have, and like me and this guy, we're already mentally checked out, ready to go somewhere else.
Yeah. All the leaders too. I mean, we were gone. Oh, yeah. Everyone's mindset was already on deployment. So it was hard to,
right,
I guess, be that guy. So then how did that affect you at all, or what, like how?
Well, yeah, for a few days. I mean, you know, that was like a day and a half into deployment.
Nice.
And so we were probably in well over 100 firefights while we were there. And so it only took a couple before I was completely like, you know, it didn't matter what I saw at that point. It didn't bother me whatsoever.
So,
or at least so I thought.
Yeah. Well, and I've talked about this too, a few times, is kind of how I compartmentalized the situation, where I went in thinking to myself, all right, this is a temporary situation. When I get out of here, like, I need to be able to separate the two. And I didn't realize that was, you know, the right thing to do, or like what, you know, kind of made me get through it. But did you feel like you did anything like that, or do you struggle with separating the two instances from, you know, deployment and civilian life back here?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a difficult question to ask, because sometimes I struggle with it, but it depends on the situation.
Very, I understand
like,
that.
Like, I think you and I talked about before, the situation where I had to take the house down. and then the situation with the girls' school, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But so, other than that, I, for some reason, and maybe I'm not mentally well, I don't know, but for some reason, I don't have a problem separating the two. Like, it's almost like saying work is work and home is home, and I completely separate them. But other than those ones that we talked about before, where it's just like, it's just too much. You have to feel something with those, you know. There's not much you can do but feel for the participants in that.
I think part of for us, like the human nature aspect of it, like you think about like the things we went through and the situations we've been through, and like the people who are deal with it most healthily compartmentalize everything kind of like night and day. They just do it.
Yeah.
But if you like, you look back at our ancestors and everything else, like, shit, man, you used to get killed fucking drinking from a stream that had dysentery in it. So like evolutionary speaking, we have that. I think we have that built in. And I think that it's part of who we are. And I think that when you have trouble tapping into that is when like other issues lead. But some of these situations will always stick with you. It doesn't matter, like, you know, whether you have that compartmentalization or not, it'll just stick with you. I think we all have that.
And you're it doesn't make you like, obviously you're gonna feel stuff, because I know there's a lot of stuff that happened too where I still feel it. I still feel like, man, I could have done this differently, or I wish I could have done this, or wish I could have that. But at the end of the day, that's not going to change it. And I'm not a super religious person, but I still, give me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, but give me the wisdom to know the difference, or something like that. Yeah, but that sticks with me. And I know that that's something I try to mentally tell myself on a daily basis is, you know, am I getting upset over something that I can't change, or is it something that, you know, I can change and I should be upset about it? And then trying to, you know, figure out the difference between the two. So,
well, that'd be, not to get all medic-y on you, but it'd be like trying to treat an expectant patient, right? Knowing good and well that nothing you do is going to keep them alive. You're using up medical supplies that could be used on someone else. And it's the same kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you spend the time and energy to worry about things that you have absolutely no control over, you're going to drive yourself insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And that's what a lot of us struggle with, is trying to change things that have already happened. Going back in these scenarios in our head and reliving them, trying to make them come out differently. Like that, you know, our power of thought can change what happened, but it doesn't. So it's hard to, because everyone sees themselves as a hero in their own story, you know, so it's hard to see the faults in yourself and in your actions and just accept them as a fault, because there's no redo. You can't go back and redo it, you know, but we're in a society where we see a lot of, you know, where, oh, you can just kind of hit reset, but that's not a real life.
Right. I mean, that speaks to your point before. We were talking about, like, we're kids training kids, and we're kids going overseas.
Yeah.
We're mentally, you know, even, you know, 23, 21, 19, we're not even full, like, through our full stages of development. Right. So we're trying to, we have a lot going on, like, internally and externally, we're literally in war. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, like, when we, you know, rethink about these situations, or we relive these situations, like, mentally we don't feel any differently about ourselves. We still have like the same like mindset we had, you know, we're still kind of the same people. So you think, and without like doing it intentionally, you apply your knowledge and your experience, like, oh well, this could have changed the outcome, but you don't have, at the time, you don't have that knowledge and experience. You don't have that wisdom as you spoke about. So you're trying to, like, and you don't do it intentionally. It's like a natural.
You're trying process. To take what you have now in your box of tools and apply them to some situation that happened in the past.
Right.
And when it's impossible.
It is. Unless,
I mean, you're a Marvel movie, but
wrap your penis around your, we talked about that. Right. You remember, I have the time gauntlet in my ball sack. I just,
you missed that part there, Smith.
Oh, I think I was there for plenty of the ball action.
Yeah.